Thank you very much, and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Pleased to be joined here today by Václav Pelíček, the Finance Director of the group. We're here today to take you through the half year results to 30th of June, 2021. We present for you, as always, the LTM numbers. If we can move you to page five, we start with the executive summary of the presentation. Here, I think for those that know me, when I did the 2019 financial results presentation, I described the results as extraordinary. When I did the 2020 results, I described them as exceptional. For the first half of 2021, I will describe them as unfortunately predictable. For those that remember, 2019 was a year of significant flux in the gas markets whilst everybody waited to find out whether there would be a new transit agreement signed by Gazprom and Ukraine at the end of 2019. Whilst there was significant uncertainty, there was therefore significant additional flows of gas through our networks in 2019 above our long-term contracted revenues, which effectively brought EBITDA forward from following periods. We had an exceptional performance in transit in 2019, and in addition, because of these exceptional flows of gas in 2019, the storage facilities throughout Europe were also completely full, which meant an exceptional performance by our storage division over and above their long-term contracted revenues. When we move into 2020, Europe had a mild winter, 2019 and 2020, which meant that storages remained full, and therefore winter-summer spreads in the first half of 2020 were high. Again, our storage business had an exceptional performance over and above its long-term contracted revenues. In addition, Ukraine unbundled its assets, gas assets, in 2020, which resulted for the first time in many years in Ukraine storages being filled up from west to east on a one-off flow through transit. 2020 results were also exceptional as well. Let's now turn to the executive summary. EPIF remains as before. We have core activities in Central Eastern Europe of gas transmission, distribution and storage of gas, distribution of electricity, and provision of district heating. Our assets are predominantly located in Slovakia, Czech Republic, and Germany. The commonality of our strategy is that we wish to be in either regulated or long-term contracted assets, which have a critical feature of converting a substantially higher part of their operating result into free cash flow. That strategy, as outlined over the last four or five years, remains firmly in place. If we look at the last 12 months ending 30th of June 2021, consolidated total revenues totaled 2.9 billion euros compared to 3.2 billion euros for full year 2020. The adjusted EBITDA for the last 12 months totaled 1.4 billion euros compared to 1.5 billion euros for full year 2020. Our proportionate pro forma adjusted EBITDA was 748 million euros compared to 766 million for the full year 2020. Our proportionate net leverage ratio stood at 4.02 at the end of June 2021, compared to 4.05 at the full year 2020. The adjusted free cash flow for the last 12 months was 961 million euros compared to the full year 2020 of 1.05 billion euros. The group cash conversion ratio, for those that know us well, we pride ourselves in our ability to convert cash. This was approximately 68% for the last 12 months, compared to 69% for the results for the full year 2020. The results are solid, the results are good, the results are predictable, and the results are up to expectations, but the results are below the previous results posted for 2020. If we move to page six, we continue to highlight the key highlights of the company: critical infrastructure, well-developed markets, leading positions. Our assets are strategic and vital for the region. Our major subsidiaries are co-owned with the Slovak state, who own 51%, and we own 49% with management control. The vast majority of our EBITDA still relates to fully regulated or long-term contracted businesses, diversified portfolio across four divisions, a high cash conversion due to well-maintained and modern asset base. We have continued to have strong profitability. We continue to be committed to our investment grade ratings, all of which were reconfirmed in the first half of this year on a stable basis. And we continue to be best in class with ESG, and we'll detail those later, but we have a 66 rating from Standard & Poor's, and we're also rated 20 by Sustainalytics, which places us in low risk category and 6 out of 62 multi-utilities. If we then look at the group performance in more detail and we turn to page 8, here we have the group structure on the left: gas transmission, gas and power distribution, gas storage and heat infra, which can also be referred to as district heating. Reconfirm our credit ratings from Standard & Poor's, Moody's and Fitch. And we list again the H1 2021 last 12 months compared to 2020, which I described as exceptional, compared to 2019, which I explained as extraordinary, and compared to 2018 and 2017, where the adjusted EBITDA was 1.46 and 1.46 billion. We go down through the numbers that I've outlined on the summary page, just to confirm that the proportionate net debt at 30th of June stood at 3.004 billion euros compared to 3.088 billion euros at the end of 2020. If we move to page 9, we start to get into the core reasons for the performances of each division. And here we list gas transmission. And here you can see that the full year 2020 EBITDA was indeed 678 million euros. And the last 12 months ended 30th of June 2021 was 577 million euros. In the first half of 21, gas flows from Russia and also LNG flows from America were significantly down. There are various public statements as to why in particular Russia would be shipping less gas, and some of the press announcements would say that Russia is placing pressure on Europe for the regulatory approval of Nord Stream 2. But anyway, you look at it, there is an extraordinary move to reduce shipments of gas in Europe in the first half of this year, which affects our business below our long-term contracted revenues, which remain in place and contracted till 2028. In addition, last year saw significant shipments into Ukraine from the West as Ukraine filled its storages to capacity. This year, for the first 6 months, there has been no or very minimal flows of gas west to east into Ukraine. So what we have is a reduced performance of Ustream down to effectively its contracted contracted volumes, and taking into account the front loading of gas flows and storage capacity filling that we outlined in the 2019 and 2020 results. On gas and power distribution, we can give you a different news. the year, the winter 2020-2021 was indeed very cold, and therefore, as those that follow our business know, in a particularly cold season, that will be positive to our earnings. And so we're pleased to announce that gas and power distribution's performance increased from €501 million EBITDA to €518 million EBITDA. In gas storage, a very pleasing performance in the first half of the year. So the LTM number for the last 12 months is €216 million compared to €214 million for the full year 2020. I would, however, point to the winter-summer spreads that are now applicable in gas storage for the first half of 2020. And you could also look at the current winter-summer spreads that are currently applicable in the market. So to the extent that our EBITDA relies on storages or storage products over and above our long-term contracted revenues, you should take into account these winter-summer spreads as an influence in the first half of the year. The fourth division, Heat Infra, again, for those that know our business well, we disposed of two large subsidiaries at the end of 2020, the district heating in Prague, Praska Teplarenska, and the district heating generating plant in Budapest, which we term as BERT. So to understand Heat Infra fully, we give you a bridge on the following pages. But in overall terms, if you take out the two businesses that were disposed, that was a drop of €48 million. So actually, the cold winter 2021 improved the results of Heat Infra on a like-for-like basis by €21 million euros. In effect, then, the total EBITDA for the group was €1.42 billion compared to €1.52 billion in the financial year 2020. On page 10, we give you a bridge. I think that bridge is something that I've already outlined more or less fully, but I leave that for you to look at, and please come back clearly if you have additional questions on the bridge that Václav has provided you for. On page 11, we go into the management team to confirm, again, for those that know the company, that last year I was the vice chairman of the board of directors, and I'm pleased to announce in the last few weeks I've also assumed the position of chief executive officer of the group, with Daniel Kretinsky moving up to be the chairman of EPIF board of directors. We continue to have a very consistent, strong, well-established senior management team with no changes during the period. The appointment of myself is detailed, and the supervisory board continues to be responsible for the monitoring of the work of the board of directors, and is detailed there. If we look then at financial profile update, I'll pass you over now on page 13 to Václav Palacek, who's the finance director of the group. And Václav, please.
Thank you, Gary, and good afternoon, everyone, also on my behalf. Before I start with the update on capital structure, I will shortly present a peer group analysis that we prepared, as we usually prepare. It's presented on slide number 13, and it's particularly useful because you can see EPIF in perspective of peer group that we are presenting here. And I wanted to highlight one certain aspect, which is a cash conversion ratio of EPIF that is at a very high level. We calculate it in a rather simple way. We deduct CapEx from EBITDA and divide by EBITDA, and the ratio stood at 86% for the LTM period ended June 2021, while you can see that our peer groups have an average of 53%. So we are rather exceptional in this ability to convert significant portion our EBITDA into free cash flow. The reason why I am highlighting this key feature is that it means we have an ability to quickly deliver if we need. Basically, if you apply proportionate free cash flow of EPS and you apply it to proportionate net debt, you will see that we have an ability to repay the debt in less than 6 years. This is truly remarkable from our perspective. With that, let's move on to slide number 14, where we present our capital structure, which is based on four policies. Three of them you know rather well. Firstly, we would like to maintain 80 to 90% of our debt in bonds and similar instruments. And as you will see later part of my presentation, as of June, we are at 89% of debt represented by bonds. Therefore, we are perfectly in line with this target. Secondly, we communicate that we would like to maintain 70% of proportionate gross debt at the holding level, which we currently have. So again, we are perfectly in line with this target. Thirdly, we are committed to maintain investment grade rating. Currently, we have BBB flat from S&P, Baa3 from Moody's, BBB minus from Fitch. All of them with a stable outlook, all of them reaffirmed recently during H1 2021, and all of them at the same level as they were obtained in 2018. So this is clear. And there is the newest policy that we have, which is our commitment to establishing a green finance framework and consider it for any future eligible projects. So this is new policy, while the first three policies are in place already since 2018 when we issued our first bond. With respect to leverage, this is cornerstone of our financing, and we are committed to maintain conservative leverage below 4.5 times net debt to EBITDA on proportionate terms, which is a dividend lockup covenant included in EPIF bond documentation. As for the capital structure across the group, we have two significant minorities in SSE and SPPI group, and in each case there is a shareholding agreement that caps leverage for each group at 2.5 times net debt to EBITDA. As for SSE group, this is kept virtually unlevered, and at SPPI group, we have a track record of leverage below 2.5 times. Therefore, we have decent headroom to navigate an upstream cash to the holding level, where, as I mentioned, 70% of group debt sits. As for the key developments, you are probably aware that EPIF issued 500 million bond in March. It was a very successful transaction, heavily oversubscribed, and we used the proceeds to repay then existing debt in order to firstly optimize interest costs and secondly to extend our tenor. On this slide 14, we are presenting what instruments were repaid. Namely, we repaid 400 million term loan originally due in 2025. Further, we repaid both Schuldschein facilities, and lastly, we repaid 70 million of the private placement that we had, which was due in 2027. Second key event was issuance of a 10-year bond at SPP Distribucija with fixed coupon of 1.0%, and we used the proceeds to repay old 500 million bond at SPP Distribucija that fell due on 23rd of June 2021. As for the dividend distribution, EPIF, the company, distributed 100 million of dividends to its shareholders up until now, and at the end of August, NAFTA voluntarily repaid 120 million on its bank facility, which is maturing in 2024. With that, we can move on to slide number 15, where we present our capital structure. We are presenting the actual figures. We are presenting full and proportionate view, and we tend to focus more on proportionate view as it presents what is truly or economically under EPIF ownership. Therefore, we are presenting balance sheet items, net debt at 3.4 billion, which is declined by roughly 100 million as compared to December 2020. And then we are presenting pro forma adjusted EBITDA for last 12 months ended June 2021 of 748 million. As for the pro forma adjustment, it means I would remind that we disposed PT and BERT in end of 2020, and through this pro forma adjustment we are removing 18 million of EBITDA generated by PT and BERT in second half of 2020. And using those figures we arrive at a leverage of 4.02 times, which is well consistent with leverage that we had in December, 4.05 times, and this is well below the 4.5 times dividend lookup covenant. On the following slide, we are presenting capital structure that provides more color on indebtedness across the group. I already mentioned we have 70% of our proportionate gross debt at EPIF level, while the rest is namely at the SPPI group level. You can see that the leverage is there at 1.3 times, while the leverage cap is at 2.5 times. Therefore, we are comfortable here, and we can distribute cash flows generated by subsidiaries from SPPI group to the holding level. And we have instruments to do that. Specifically, there is a cash pooling agreement so that we can share cash in SPPI group efficiently. And also we are depositing any spare cash from SPPI group to its shareholders, basically as prepayment for dividends. And once a year, we declare dividends and offset it against those prepayments. So this is nothing really new. This is how we organize the group and make sure that there is no trapped cash and we use the liquidity efficiently. On slide number 17, we are presenting gross debt overview as of June 2021. To the top left hand side, on the pie chart, you can see 89% of the debt is represented by bonds, as I was mentioning. And this is exactly after the two refinancing actions I mentioned. Firstly, EPIF bond issuance, and secondly, SPPD bond issuance. As I said, through this refinancing, we intended to optimize our cost of debt, and the trend of our interest expense is clearly visible on the right-hand column chart. It speaks for itself. And secondly, through the refinancing, we wanted to extend the average tenor we have. At year-end 2020, the tenor was already 4.5 years, and through those two issuances and repayments then existing debt, we extended the weighted average tenor to 5.9 years. And this is visible on the chart on the left bottom side, debt maturity structure. Basically, the next major upcoming maturity is in 2024. This, you can see 750 million, which is, by the way, first EPIF bond issued in April 2018. And for each subsequent year, there is one bond to be refinanced. And we believe, given our track record on the Eurobond market, this is rather readily manageable. So With that message, we have the corporate structure that we envisaged already in 2018. Right now we are there. We have very competitive cost of debt. And with that, I will hand over to Gary to take you through the following slide, which is the update on our ESG initiatives.
So if we move to page 18, we are very pleased to update you with two new announcements since the last time we presented. The first is, as you know, Standard & Poor's. We were the first company in Central Eastern Europe to obtain an ESG rating. This has just been recently reconfirmed this week to 66 out of 100, and we're really pleased with that endorsement of the progress that we've made. And we've also, for the first time, taken a rating from Sustainalytics. In June of this year, we obtained a rating of 20, which places us in the low-risk category, and indeed 6 out of 62 companies that they rate in the multi-utilities sector. We have announced many ESG goals, which are detailed fully on our website. And in particular, in May 2021, I was delighted to commit the group to set a net zero carbon goal for 2040. This is beyond the official 2050 EU carbon neutrality objective. We have a clear decarbonisation roadmap, and we will transition the group's generating assets away from lignite to a balanced mix of CCGT units, biomass and waste to energy plants by, but probably before, 2030. We therefore intend to reduce our CO2 emissions compared to 2020 by 60% by 2030. And clearly it's my objective to actually do more than that. We are, as the owner of gas infrastructure assets, uniquely positioned to be a front runner in the accommodation of hydrogen across the entire gas value chain. And we already have several projects We already have several projects in full planning. Major portion of our EBITDA now carries a very marginal CO2 input. Gas transmission, gas and power distribution, or gas storage accounts for 91% of adjusted EBITDA and only 6% of total CO2 emissions in 2020. Despite our growth in energy production because of the cold winters, we've reduced our SO2 emissions by 61% and dust emissions by 47% between 2015 and 2020. And we've made throughout this period substantial refurbishment programs. The existing biomass boilers and a brand new state-of-the-art waste incineration plant operated by Pilsenska Teplarenska were complemented this year by a new biomass boiler, which we launched in July 2021 at our site by United Energy. On the social side, health and safety working conditions continue to be a top priority of EPIF Group, and it continues to be seen by a health, safety and environmental committee, which meets on a regular basis and reports directly to the board of directors in EPIF. We have full equality, diversity and inclusion policies now in place and clearly visible on our website, and something that I'm particularly pleased about. We have a very constructive relationship with our labour unions and indeed no history of strikes or boycotting actions from collective bodies. And what I'm particularly pleased is 96% of our nearly 6,000 employees are covered by collective bargaining agreements, and this is something that we fully support and endorse and remain committed to. We have transparent corporate governance. We have two shareholders, EPH and Macquarie's, through a consortium of investors. The agreements between them, the SHA has very strong minority shareholder rights and outlines clear corporate governance. This has now been in place for nearly 5 years. And continues to be exercised rigorously as per the shareholders agreement. The governance of EPIF and its subholdings is based on the two-tier management structure, which is best practice, and it comprises of the board of directors and the supervisory board. So some quite significant progress on ESG since the last time that we came to you. If we now look at the business segments, and we move to page 20, please. And here we move to gas transmission. A lot of you know this already. We are the sole TSO in Slovakia. Almost a third of the European import capacity from Russia comes through us. It's a key strategic asset for Slovakia, who own 51%. It's rated A+, A2, A1, and one of the largest contributors to the Slovak tax budget. The update on CapEx, the Lanzhou entry point is now ready to take full volumes from Nord Stream 2 once that becomes operational, and we are expecting to complete the Slovak-Polish interconnector in early 2022. If we look at the stable and fully EU-compliant regulatory environment, it is as we said last time. Targets are set for a regulator for a five-year period. From 2022, the regulator will move to a fully cost-based approach with secondary adjustment based on benchmarking will be applied. Transmission fees are fixed at the start of each contract and then subsequently unaffected by any future regulatory changes. We are comfortable and happy with the new regulatory environment that comes into place in 2022. We want to re-emphasize that 100% of our contracts are ship or pay, and the long-term capacity bookings, which is 50% of our total annual capacity, is booked at least until 2028. We continue at the end of 2019, a five-year gas transit deal was reached between Russia and Ukraine, which currently is 40 BCM reserved for Ustream until 2024, with an option for a 10-year expansion at that date. We continue to be highly cash generative. The business continues to have limited maintenance capex and has a sound financial performance as outlined by Vasek in his financial section. So the business remains solid, dependable, underpinned by its long-term contracts. What has changed this year is that in 2019 and 2020 we had extraordinary and exceptional shipments of gas in Europe. In 2019, whilst all gas players made themselves ready for any eventuality in the Ukraine Gazprom negotiations, and in 2020 in particular, there was a one-off significant shipment west to east as Ukraine filled its storages. So the business gas transmission remains underpinned by its core businesses. Storages in Europe are now significantly below levels that they should have been on a historical basis. So you can read your own assumptions there, but if storages are below long-term historical trends for this time of the year, where our expectations for gas flows would be going forward. Ustream, we move to page 21. There's little update from, I think, the last presentation we made. Clearly, I think the questions you're going to ask is around Nord Stream 2. Nord Stream 2 is effectively physically complete and is ready to transport gas. There was an agreement between the US and the German governments whereby sanctions would be lifted to enable the pipeline to become operational. The assets themselves are subject to European regulation on unbundling, and as yet the pipeline does not have permissions to commence shipment. We do expect shipments to take place in the fourth quarter of this year on a limited basis, but clearly the situation remains unclear, not least because there are currently political elections taking place in Germany in September. So as always, as you know, we're relatively agnostic on the volumes of gas that flow to Slovakia, Austria and Italy, and whether those volumes come east to west from Ukraine or effectively come north to south via Nord Stream 2 and via our Lanzhot entry point. If we move to page 22, gas and power distribution, I'll hand this division over to Václav, please.
Thank you, Gary, and I think I will be rather quick with both DSOs. Basically, both of them continue to maintain their monopoly position either as a gas distributor in Slovakia or the power distributor in central Slovakia. They continue to operate under a stable and transparent regulatory framework. We already communicated that the regulatory period in Slovakia is to be extended till year end 2022, when a new period should be started in January 2023. What we have the knowledge, we do not expect any major changes in the regulatory framework or in the structure of our distribution tariffs. As for the results of both DSOs, they report adjusted EBITDA of 518 million for the 12-month period ended June 2021, which is 17 million improvement as compared to full year 2020. And this is thanks to favorable weather conditions, namely due to cold weather in period February till May 2021, which was unusually cold. And as such, we distributed 10% more electricity through SSD, and also we distributed by 16% more gas to our customers, specifically to households. So that's for our DSOs, and let's have a look at the heat infra segment that was also positively impacted by weather impact. If you look at the results, heat infra reports 109 million for a 12-month period ended June 2021, while 2020 performance was 136 million. However, you need to deduct 48 million as the performance of PT and BERT in H1 2020. Those entities were disposed, so this is the reason for the decline. On the other hand, as I said, the segment overall was impacted by positive weather impact, which resulted in 21 million higher EBITDA. And after the disposal of PT and BERT, we continue to have three CHPs operating in highly efficient cogeneration mode. We envisage to transition away from coal, and this year we are already refurbishing our boilers in Plzeň and in Komořany with aim to increase biomass co-combustion. So that's a quick update also for heat infra segment, and I would hand over back to Gary to take us through.
On page 25, we look quickly at the key investment highlights for gas storage. As you know, this is a really well strategically positioned division that we have. We're the market leader, 24% share in terms of capacity in the gas storage market in the Central Eastern European region, which is Slovak Republic, Czech Republic and Austria. We are the monopoly gas storage operator in Slovakia with 100% market share. And in an acquisition we made, a very successful acquisition we made at the end of 18, we have 7.6% market share now of the German storage market through our acquisition of Nafta Spica. Our assets are strategically located in Czech Republic, Austria and Slovakia. We have connection to all Central European gas routes. And in Bavaria, we have a very well strategically located storage facility as Bavaria plans to close down its nuclear facilities. And Bavaria is a long way from the renewable fields of the North Sea, making electricity transmission still not possible to southern Germany. Medium and long-term contracts remain in place. Our cash flow remains stable and predictable. Where our results are flexible is in volumes that we may do over and above our capacity contracted. And this was the case in 19 and 20 when storages were particularly full. But in 21, as outlined to you before, at the end of June, storages in Europe and at our facilities remain below historical trends. There is no price regulation. It's the only division that I have in the group which is not regulated, but it is long-term contracted. And we have many other opportunities that we are putting in place via particularly innovative products that we're bringing to the market, which gives us additional chances of generating value. If we move then to page 27, which is the final page of today's presentation before questions, to confirm on environmental, social and governance, rating from Sustainalytics, rating from Standard & Poor's. On the strategic side, I'm sure you're aware, but I will confirm that on the 9th of July, EPIF announced that it commenced a strategic review, which may include an initial public offering, among other options. And on the 23rd of August 2021, EPIF announced an appointment of myself, Gary Mazzotti, to the position of Chief Executive Officer with immediate effect. On financing, Vasek is taking you through some of these. We confirm through our subsidiary EP Energy Trading, we completed the acquisition of 100% share in Dobra Energie SRO for a primary cash consideration of 22.6 million euros. This is a consolidation move by myself to consolidate with a small supply business that we have, EPET, within the group to increase the scale of that business. In July 2021, EPIF terminated some of its interest rate swaps as we delivered, and the cash settlement in total amount was 12 million euros. And on 25th of August 2021, NAFTA voluntarily repaid 120 million euros on a long-term facility maturing 2024 using its own cash resources. I confirm yet again that we have four bonds outstanding, that we have a 4.5 times dividend lockup covenant, that our leverage at the end of June was 4.02. So we continue to monitor well inside our dividend leverage, dividend lockup covenant, and we'll continue to do that. And I think what you can see through the financial presentation is the company is effectively delevering as the EBITDA performance in transit has reduced. Should that performance increase at some stage in the future, then clearly we would then take on additional debt at or around the 4.3 times proportionate debt. So that ends today's presentation of the LTM results to 30th of June 2021 compared to the full year results 2020. And just to summarize, 19 results I declared were extraordinary, 20 results I declared as exceptional, and the first half 2021 results I will declare as effectively, unfortunately, predictable. And with that, we would throw open to questions, please.
If you would like to register to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad. Or if you have joined online, please press the flag icon at the bottom of your screen. We have a question from Ulrich Scholz of UniCredit. Ulrich, please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Gary and Václav. Many thanks for the presentation and the insights you gave us. I would first have a question regarding the regulatory developments in Slovakia with regard to gas distribution. When can we expect here any news flow, how the new terms might look like? The second question would be on hydrogen, because you highlighted that you, of course, the group is very well positioned, yeah, to play a strong role in future green hydrogen technology. There was a lot of news flow on that topic during the past 12 months. It would just be interested how you yourself assess how to best assess the readiness of gas infrastructure to handle green hydrogen in the future, yeah, as what indicators you would view as good ones to compare here, perhaps different assets as well.
Okay, thank you, Ulrich. I think on the first side, which is the when can we expect news from the Slovak regulator, clearly it is a new regulator in place. There is significant new legislation via the winter package that needs to be introduced in Slovakia. He's trying to unify the regulatory approach across all sectors, not just gas, but electricity and water and gas transmission as well. The indication was that the new regulatory period would start in 2022. We are now in September 2021. So I think it is questionable whether the regulator will be ready by 2022. So I can't give you any clear guidance there on when that might take place. On hydrogen, I think the world of hydrogen develops very quickly indeed. I would point those that are interested. I think there was an extraordinarily interesting paper from the UK government and the UK hydrogen strategy only a few weeks ago. There was also a memorandum of understanding signed by Ukraine storages with RWE for the production of green hydrogen in Ukraine. So I think this agenda is moving quite quickly. Clearly for us in transit, we are positioning ourselves at Ustream to be ready to transit hydrogen. I think they made an announcement last week that they could be able to take 20% hydrogen from as early as 2023, 2024. So I think on the hydrogen side, I don't think the infrastructure will particularly be the limiting factor. I think it will be the supply. So when you're looking at the hydrogen question, you're looking really at will demand grow supply or will supply drive demand? And my personal view is it may well be the secondary, in an environment where there is significant subsidies being provided at local and European level. Clearly, where we are now is in a situation where this part of the region is dominated by black coal, by lignite, and in Germany by nuclear, and we need to transition quickly away from coal and lignite, and the only transitional fuel that can do that is natural gas. So we expect natural gas to play a key role in the transition away from coal. And then the second one, as you quite rightly say, Ulrich, is the transition from natural gas to some form of green gas, namely hydrogen. And the reason for hydrogen is simple. With the vast quantities of renewable power that will come online by 2040, 2050, there has to be a viable method for the transportation, storage, and indeed burning of renewable heat power. And it's not batteries. So it has to be hydrogen. And hydrogen at the moment is grey hydrogen. And we think there will be a transition to blue, which is carbon capture. And clearly there's very positive news from, I think it was the Norwegian Prime Minister a few weeks ago, committing Norway to use its gas assets for the production of blue. There is also very strong indications from Russia that they're also fully committing themselves to the production of blue. Clearly, we believe in the latter case that our infrastructure is critical for the transportation and distribution of natural gas to Western Europe. We think our assets will remain critical for a blue hydrogen scenario. And then eventually by 2040, 2050, when hydrolysis is 3-4 times more efficient and huge swathes of renewable power have been laid down in Europe, in North Africa, and as per the European Union's 2x40 gigawatt policy envisaged also in Ukraine, that again our infrastructure is centrally located, not only for the transmission of natural gas, not only for the transmission of blue hydrogen, but ultimately for the transmission of green hydrogen. And hydrogen has to be a solution of scale, and therefore our infrastructure assets are ideally positioned. Of course, 2040, 2050 is a very long way away, and I can't tell you what eventually will happen, but I can tell you that as an owner of significant gas infrastructure assets, we are positioning, and in fact already have positioned, EPIF to be at the forefront of the transition agenda to hydrogen. So I hope in overall terms that gives you an answer to those two questions, Uri.
Yeah, many thanks. Very helpful.
I can talk about hydrogen all day long. Do we have any further questions?
We don't have any further questions registered, but it's star one or the flag icon for any more.
In which case, I'd like to thank you all for joining. Please look at the presentation. If you have further questions, come back to Vasek and myself. Although the performance is down from prior years, we did flag that prior years was quite something extraordinary, exceptional. And ultimately, if you actually look at the numbers we've produced for the last 12 months, we still think they're a pretty impressive set of numbers with a very conservative capital structure. So happy to answer questions if you want to come back to Vasek and myself at any time in the future. Otherwise, it's 4 p.m. on a Friday in Czech Republic. The sun is shining, it's 27 degrees, and I wish everybody a great and enjoyable weekend. Thank you very much.
Thank you.